Clay, to start this one off, I have a trivia question for you.
Mm.
What is the official name of the android that the crew were calling Data? He has an official name, which I only just learned.
Dana.
His name is Daystrom Android M510.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize that, but apparently that's the case. He's commonly referred to as Data, which is what his little Wikipedia entry says.
I was thinking that the last, to sort of crib a bit from Voyager, the last step in his evolution is for someone to call him Data and for him to be like, you know what? Can you just call me Tim from now on?
I'll be known as Tim. It is kind of weird that he's Data, even though he's not really Data anymore. He's kind of an amalgamation of everybody, but we'll continue calling him Data. It makes more sense. So we're here to talk about the 9th episode of the first.
I have a trivia question for you.
Sure.
What, when they announced that this series was happening,
mm-hmm. Wait, what the series were the season?
The series. Yeah. The series. What were the two conditions Patrick Stewart said he had that had to be met for him to agree to do this show?
Well, I think the first one was another zero on the check. And the second one was no Borg, I believe.
No Borg, and also he didn't want to be standing on the bridge of a starship.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there was a third one, right? He also didn't want to wear the uniform ever.
Oh, yes, I think that's true, yeah.
So he's yeah. As Meatloaf said, one out of three ain't bad.
Well, no, because he wore the first series.
Oh, in the first season. Yeah, that's right.
First season.
Yeah, never mind. So 0-3 then. Well, the season's young. He's got 1,000 at-bats where he can pull it together. Mm-hmm. This is the 9th episode of the 3rd season of Star Trek Picard. It's called Vox. I think that's how you pronounce it. It has a little tilde over the O, which I didn't recognize. Aired on April 13th, 2023. What number Star Trek content is this, Clay? Episodes and movies. What number of like total Star Trek things
total?
Is this? Yeah, it's in the 800s.
Oh, really? 823.
882.
Ah.
882. Written by Sean Tretta and Kylie Rosetta, I guess, and directed by Terry Metalis in Universe State. April 16th. It was almost exactly the day it aired. Wow.
Oh,
incredible.
That's fun.
2401. In this one called Vox, a devastating... What was the name of the Klingon in Discovery? Wasn't that Vox? Was that Vox? The guy who might have been... Yeah.
The cool one who dies?
No, the one... Oh, maybe. The albino who becomes the human.
Oh,
Ash Tyler.
Remember.
I think his name was Vox, maybe. A devastating revelation about Jack alters the course of Picard's life forever and uncovers the truth that threatens every soul in the Federation. The final battle begins. My energy is just fading. The final battle begins as Picard and the crew race to save the galaxy from annihilation, but not without a gut-wrenching cost.
Mm.
Thank you, Blurb. So here we are. Here we stand. United we fall. We're at the 9th episode, the penultimate one. There's only one left. And I don't know. Do you want to start? I guess we were talking about this before we started recording. Where there's like two ways this can go. There's either a lot to say or not much to say, really.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of starting in the there's not much to say camp, but I feel like it'd be moved out of that. But I guess I would just, I'll take a little bit of a self-congratulatory victory rap in that I feel I was 90% right about the season the whole way through, I think. And that's like the best I can say. I think I wobbled a little bit based on everyone liking the first couple episodes so much. But as we talked about in the previous one, I think it's the chickens have all come home to roost at this point in the series. And I think it is undeniable what this is, which is another season of Star Trek Picard. Another season of modern Star Trek, and that's it. But what say you?
Where to start?
Do you want to start with the Borg?
Yes, let's start with the Borg.
Okay.
I almost audibly groaned when they revealed the Borg cube.
They did it so early in the the timing was like, isn't that a better cliffhanger for the ending of the last episode? No,
I don't know. I mean, no, you got to set.
I mean,
up what's
sucks,
going on?
But yeah. The problem.
I mean,
is
you can't
groan. You groan either way.
Yeah, you can't really. I think it's something that they should have put into play earlier, frankly, because it is such a victim of the new Star Trek mystery box thing, where you get the way that they set the whole thing up with the red eyes and the red vines and the petals and shit and the door. And you spend the entire season going like, what could this stuff possibly mean? And then they're like, nope, psych, had nothing to do with anything. It's just a casual memory that he had that was indicative of the fact that vines represent larger structures beneath.
Yeah.
And featured the amazing line of dialogue after he says, none of this means anything. Troy says, symbols have nothing but meaning, which was one of a couple
doozies.
bangers in this episode.
Yeah. The Borg have been in three seasons of this show.
All three seasons.
Yeah.
And they've never really settled on what to do with them. I think the biggest downside to this is this all works a lot better if this is the first season of the show. Right?
Yeah.
Like the Borg,
yes,
revelation works
worse.
Better.
Yeah.
I still think they waited a little too long, maybe, to imply that the Borg were involved, because there's really no mention, hardly at all, of the Borg in this entire season up until this switcheroo.
Seven and Shaw, I guess.
Yeah, and like there's also the Wolf 359 conversation, which honestly, I'm shocked that Shaw didn't turn to Picard and see. I would say, I was right, motherfucker. You are dangerous. This is all your fucking fault.
Picard recognizes it. Yeah, it's sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you want to continue on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure totally how to dip into it, because it's I think this episode suffers from fatigue of callbacks, and not that this one has more necessarily than any other ones, but it does have quite a few. But just that if you've had 9 servings of or 8 servings of ice cream and then they bring out a ice cream sundae, you're only going to enjoy it so much. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And you feel like, you're just worn out from the season so far to get to that point?
I think so, because I stick by what I said, where they kind of ran out of story after about 6 episodes. Because since then, this whole changeling and Borg plot has been a complete mess. That are the changelings just not involved anymore? Were the only changelings working with the Borg Vadic?
Right.
Are we going to see like a whole bunch more changelings next episode? I'm not really sure any of that stuff stands.
Do they even confirm that the changelings and Borg are working together in this episode? Or is it like, I know that they are, but does anyone sort of explicitly say that?
I believe in another amazing line at some point, Beverly says, the Borg and the changelings have been working together from the start.
Okay. So there's confirmed. It's in the text.
But yeah. I don't know if, this is another thing we can get into separately if you want to, but
yep.
Did you see that once again, Terry Metalis on Twitter? No, I'm sorry. In a interview said that the floaty goopy head that Vedic is talking to is the Borg Queen.
Yeah, sure.
Like, is that, again, isn't that something that you would get across in your show and not on...
in an interview. I mean, that's the...
That seems kind of like an important plot point.
Well, yeah, and I guess that... I mean, I guess if he lives up to what he did before, that means that in the next episode, they're going to make that explicit, right?
That's true, yes.
That's what they did the first time when they were like, Vadek's the changeling, and everyone went, what? And then the next episode, it was revealed that they were changelings.
Very strange.
Yeah, it's, I did see that, and I sort of, it's kind of a distraction from the episode, but it made me wonder about, like, is the intent of doing that to build your own Twitter following? Like, is the reason that you do things like that to cause people to go to your Twitter feed? That's a very cynical take, but it seems that's like, if someone were to say like, hey, Terry, you need to get like a Twitter following here so we can, you know, get bigger things and people will back you and you can, you know, get more work and stuff like that. I feel like that's what you would do. You would just sort of leave out information and then reveal it on your Twitter feed. And it's cynical, but I don't see any other reason why that's the case, because all of the stuff that they reveal is fairly important. And yeah, it's bizarre that it's not in the text of the show at all. Like, why? Or if it is, he doesn't treat it like it's a spoiler in any way. Right. Like, he just kind of says it before things come out, and in a way that makes it seem like the audience has actually missed what they were saying. Like, the audience isn't intelligent enough to capture what has been said in the show. And that's just not the case. I don't know why they do that beyond a sort of additional, what this whole franchise seems to be at this point, which is just kind of building a brand that like will revolve around itself. So I'm not sure.
Yeah. But to kind of jump back to what I was saying, before I derailed myself.
No, it's fine.
I think the big reveals of this episode don't really work for me for a number of reasons, but the biggest being they come at the end of a season that has been ostensibly built on, hey, remember this? Which I didn't mind up to a point, but then once they ran out of story, that was all they had left. And so you've got the Borg showing up here, and then later on you've got the Enterprise D showing up. And in both of these instances, I felt really kind of underwhelmed by stuff, not only because, I mean, with the Borg, probably because it's not like we haven't seen the Borg twice before in this series.
Yeah.
And in the Enterprise D, I think it's just like it's the one thing that everybody assumed was going to happen. And dramatically, it makes sense that it happens at this point in the story. But they do that thing where they assign such reverence to it in a moment where there absolutely should be none. Like the point at which they are walking through the Enterprise D, and like jizzing all over the seat cushions.
Yeah, the apocalypse is outside the window.
Yeah, the fleet has been taken over by the Borg. Like, you've... Guys, you can kiss the control panel after it's all said and done. You get stuff to do.
Yeah.
Geordi's kids are in trouble. It's, you know, I don't know. It's just like it. So like when they show the Titan at the beginning of the series, and they do that sort of like Star Trek, the motion picture sort of glamour shot of the Titan, I'm like, oh yeah, no, okay, that's fine. That makes sense. They're going under the ship for the first time. We're getting to see this cool new classic retro looking design. It makes perfect sense. And like, I understand the idea of like, well, they're back on the bridge.
Yes.
So I'm sorry, we're not talking about the Borg right now. we're back on the bridge. Isn't this amazing? It's like, yeah, but it's kind of it's not really the time to have that kind of moment.
Right.
I don't know.
As people had mentioned in the Discord, it's, you know, the timing there is that they make a joke about the carpet exists in the ship.
And, right, yeah.
You know, it is coming off of Geordi's daughters have been assimilated at that point, and like everyone is dead. The ships are moving in some sort of weird armada formation thing, and everything is fucked. The Borg are coming. It's I was trying to figure out where I stand with it, because I guess my major problem really just comes down to the story that was being told. And like, it's hard to describe. Like there's this interesting perspective difference that happens between people who like the show and don't like the show, I think. And so apparently it's been a fairly divisive show. I feel it's been like our most divisive coverage since we started it. I see most of it because I'm on Patreon and you're not, so I see like the comments and stuff. But some people really like this show. And I think the difference is to me is that someone left a comment here that I'm not really picking on, but I thought it was like insightful into like the difference of it. They say, so this is a couple episodes ago. They say, I disagree with you got your notion that they haven't been able to bring anything story-wise interesting into this season apart from the typical Borg references and Dominion plotline. Episode 1-4 of this season had to do with a completely new life form and escaping from that life form. It also dealt with the moral gray area of turning Jack over and risking the entire crew's life so that he could stand trial. Episode 5 saw the return of Ro Laren. Episode 6 had references, albeit small, from the present to the first season of TNG, including Moriarty. So, I don't disagree with any of that. The problem is
all of that did happen.
All of that did happen. I had to remind myself what the life form was in the first couple episodes. It's the nebula, apparently, that was alive. Right. If you remember that. Mm-hmm. So here's my take on that, Clay. I'm gonna tell you a story. Okay.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Let me sit down.
It'll be a
cross my legs and get my hot cocoa.
I woke up this morning and I had to work, and then I had dinner with the kids and I put them to bed, and now I'm podcasting and I'm going to go to bed later. Mm. Okay. That's technically,
can I buy the rights to this story?
That's technically a story, right?
Yes.
But there's nothing in there, right? There's no meat to that story. There's nothing insightful. It's not saying anything. I'm not saying that like I woke up this morning, I went to work where like people are being prepared for layoffs and I'm not sure that I'm qualified. And then I came home and I had dinner with the kids and one of the kids is sick. It's not like there's nothing to what I just told you. It's just a list of things that happened. And this season is that. And I see the difference between people who like the season will, in my opinion, think that that is saying something when it's not. This season in this series is just a sequence of events that happen one after another. And it becomes difficult and impossible to grok towards the end of it when you get to like a Borg reveal, because none of this was building towards a Borg reveal. So you're just, you're left underwhelmed. And people who are maybe excited to see the Borg again, yet again, you know, and down to the fact that Picard seems to have the same reaction in every season that the Borg are introduced. He says, I'm responsible for this.
The thing that I was trying to remember was I thought the whole point of the first season was that he was like pro Borg now, in as far as like the wasn't the whole thing with him going to the cube in the first season to be I guess he was pro ex Borg, right?
Yeah, pro ex Borg. Yeah, okay. Recovered Borg, which are fine.
He hates the regular Borg still, is that the deal?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I just can't imagine, like, every time they're revealed, he just has this like this dramatic like, I'm responsible for this. It's all my fault. You weren't there when I killed 1,000 people.
It does. His reaction to the Borg is very close to bordering on like racist uncle at Thanksgiving kind of response.
Not these Borg. That's why he likes the good ex-Borg. He likes the nice Borg.
It's like, well, 7's one of the good ones.
But that's my response to people who think that we're being unfair towards the season, is that I don't, like, unless someone can prove to me what this is about, and we thought it was about family, right? This show is not about family. It has nothing to say about family. It has characters who are related to each other on the screen together. But there's no insight into what a family is. There is no drama based off of the relationship of being a family. There is no insightful or interesting or different take on what it means to be related to each other, to not be related, to be the next generation is kind of like a running thing that they have going here, but it doesn't really mean anything except that you get assimilated if you're young. I don't know what the fuck that, like all that stuff. Yeah. But that's my major issue with it, is that like it's not enough for this series to hit the references for me, just because they've already done all this at this point. And so I know the Borg exists. I know all this stuff.
But Wes, they're the crew of the USS Enterprise. they are their own family.
That's right.
Isn't that what matters, especially to the one guy whose kids are currently
zombies
murdering people, and let's not forget Picard's son who is perpetrating this just like his old man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that's the kind of stuff that irks me, is like when they try to do these platitudinal, if that's a word, lines that make it seem like it's about something, but it's just not. Because like,
it's if you want to have the initial moment, it's the initial thought that it is the first line of a script that you would write if someone said this scene starts with the characters acknowledging that they're family. You know, it's like there is no, it's a Hallmark card version of a real emotion. You know, like real shows say something about the relationship, like really great love songs say something that's unique about love. Really great movies about love have like unique things about it. Things about family have things to say about that. There's like positives and there's negatives. And this show is just a Hallmark card version of it, is like family is forever. Like a character will just say that. And it's like, well, what the fuck? That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, like, you know, you've got this scene with all of them on the Enterprise Bridge and they're having this moment where they're talking about how they're family or whatever. That doesn't land for me, because everybody in that room has expressed instances in which they have their own family.
Right.
That plays if the central character of your show, Jean-Luc Picard, who has had this running storyline this season about, oh, he has a son, that line plays if it turns out Jack is not his son.
Right.
And it turns out that Picard thinks he has this family finally, and then it's taken away from him for whatever reason. At that point, that's when that line plays, because Picard feels like he's alone, but he's surrounded by his surrogate family.
Right.
It doesn't play just for the sake of they're all standing on the same fucking bridge after 35 years. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Looking.
And it's, yeah. Yeah. And it's, this episode in particular felt like it was just checking boxes to get to the finale, honestly.
Yeah.
And I like big boxes.
Big cubes.
But big cubes, yeah. But like, yeah, I didn't find anything like the other thing is like if we're supposed to care about any of this, anything that's happened, right? Shouldn't Picard, or at the very least Beverly, be with Jack on the Borg cube or something? Like,
yeah.
He just fucks off, and they're like, well, I guess there's nothing we can do about that. We may as well go to Frontier Day. And which, I mean, I guess there is this looming thing at Frontier Day, obviously, yes. However, they just discovered Jack is a nascent Borg who can control these other nascent Borgs, and he's just left to go find the Borg cube.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, that's important. And clearly it's important, because when he goes there, he gets plugged into the mainframe, and their entire plan goes off without a hitch.
Yeah.
So, like, it feels like they should have sent someone off. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some next episode. It's going to be Picard talking to him over the view screen, saying about how you're my son and blah 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 blah, that kind of bullshit. But but like there's just no, like, it just doesn't feel like if there is any thematic stuff happening in this show, this episode is, I think, where you really need to really ring that bell, and they didn't even bother trying.
Yeah I don't see anything there, I don't think. Like, in the same way that looking back on it, I don't feel like I saw any of that in the first season or the second season, really. A lot of it, as it moves along, a lot of it is just reminds me of, I am starting to get flashbacks to the other seasons. As I mentioned, I was listening to the podcast we did. But like, remember in the second season, it started with this whole Laris and Picard potential relationship angle, right?
Yes,
and it just didn't do anything. It just went away after an episode. And
they rejected all of my scripts,
my suggestions,
mainly because of the lack of shirts worn by myself and the lovely lady playing Laris.
It's warm in France this time of year, I kept saying. No AC in that old castle.
They didn't like the way I said stomping grapes with such a glimmer in my eye.
I would rather watch that video of the woman stomping grapes who falls off and hurts herself.
Man, classic. Does anybody find out what happened to that woman? She deserves an award for jump-starting the modern internet as we know it currently. Or maybe maybe she needs to be put in jail. I don't know.
She might be in bad shape at this point.
That's true.
She's like Boggs from Shawshank. She might never walk again. I just watched Shawshank the other day.
Were you folding laundry in front of TNT? Is that why you watched Shawshank?
We sought it out on HBO Max and popped it right on. Great movie.
Nice.
Quality movie. To say anything new.
Very good.
Yeah.
Another one of those movies that didn't do well in the theater, but did very well on TV.
The movie theater. The video store is what saved it after it was all said and done. It's tough for me to talk about the Borg, I think, mostly just because we've seen them so frequently, and you know, it's the epitome of a bad thing to bring back just because they have nothing to say about them at this point. There's even the Borg statement of intent is that they're angry at the Federation, and that's why they've joined with the changelings, apparently, is what the Borg Queen says. But
yeah, this is like in Spider-Man 3, but you weren't expecting me to pull that.
Oh, nice. Almost as good as Shawshank.
Yes. It's like in Spider-Man 3 when they have to figure out why Venom and Sandman are working together. And they have one 2-minute scene where Venom is like, "You hate Spider-Man and I hate Spider-Man. So how about we join up and hate Spider-Man together?"
Yeah. I mean, because they have to literalize the Venom symbiont relationship, right? So they have to have Venom say it to somebody else and have it make sense.
Yes.
It's mostly impressive to me. It's so obvious that it's just a reference fest because there's nothing left to say about the Borg with Picard. You know, we've gone down this path already. We've already talked about everything that the Borg can say. Picard has already had endless scenes where he says, "I was there at Wolf 359 and they made me do things I didn't want to do."
He keeps saying that. Makes me think he actually kind of liked it.
Maybe this is a good way to jump into something that's strange to me. And it just continues what we talked about before. The character of Picard at this point is a fucking sad sack, pathetic old man. Isn't he? He's so miserable about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happens when your whole fucking season is people yelling at him.
It's
just like everybody who talks to him hates him for some reason. And then eventually they're like, "Well, we were 30 years ago we were buds, so I guess it's okay." But
yeah, he's so low energy. I put in the Discord the clip of that first X-Men movie where he meets Wolverine, and I mean, he's obviously 20-something years younger in that one, but just a totally different energy and just totally carries himself differently. But he's just so, as you're saying,
he was in a wheelchair then,
and he was, and he still carried himself better than he does here. Everything he learns, he's just like, "This is all my fault. Everything's my fault." And it's so, the show just isn't saying anything about that. You know, it's fine. I would say it's a little bit redundant and you're beating a dead horse at this point to have this be every single Picard storyline where he just has to suffer somehow. But it's not saying anything interesting about the character or, you know, the lesson that he learns from all the seasons never seems to amount to anything that contradicts his sadness at the start. The show is just built around you wallow in the sadness for a little bit until you have the action sequence that ends everything and rectifies the situation, and then everybody's happy. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. you know, I will say to kind of sort of take the middle road with what that comment that you read earlier was saying.
Yeah.
I do think that actually in the first four episodes or so, they did kind of have an interesting angle. It wasn't like the most interesting novel thing, but the what they were doing with Riker and his descent into darkness and all that kind of stuff, and the way that being on this mission kind of pulled him back and showed him the beauty of life or whatever, that's actually saying something. Like, again, they only kind of say that in the last episode of that little arc,
yeah.
So it's not really there throughout the whole thing, but at least they're trying. But everything since then, I would say, yeah, there's just this lack of it being really about anything other than just watching these characters that you like talking to each other, which is fine, I guess, yeah. If that's what you're... It's the strange thing about this season is I keep thinking about Star Trek Nemesis. And I wasn't expecting to do that, and it's not like in a... this comparing stories or like beats and it's similar or anything like that. I keep thinking about Star Trek Nemesis because that movie, even though it's not the best Star Trek movie they've ever made, I actually don't think it's as bad as a lot of people give it.
Yeah. It's kind of middling in my opinion.
Write it off to be. Yeah. The thing that I kept making me think about it is that, like, they are at least telling a new story there and not relying so much on all of this other stuff to bolster them. And I know it's been 30 years and it was great to see everybody, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But like, I think about Star Trek, the motion picture. It's not like Star Trek, the motion picture is 80% references to the show.
Yeah.
Right. It hadn't been on the air for 10 years at that point. Everything looks different. Spock hates everybody.
Yeah. Kirk is kind of melancholy about the whole thing.
Yeah. The Dr. McCoy has like this big gnarly beard and like an awesome
swingers
chain. You know, it's like they're trying to tell new stories, and I keep thinking to myself, man, I kind of prefer Nemesis as the ending to these characters, just because they are active, they were actually trying to tell a new story. Whereas when you pull up to the final hour of this, it just feels like an exercise in nostalgia, and like it didn't start that way as much, but it's really ending that way, and it's not. I don't find it satisfying as a story.
Yeah. So I guess I don't know.
And it's got pieces. I'm sorry. It's got pieces that are really interesting. It's got the data thing is really interesting. Like, that's a legitimate kind of like step forward where I can see, oh, okay, they're taking things that existed previously and they're using it to make something new.
Yeah.
I like what they did with Ro, where they used the history there to kind of parse through this changeling thing. I like what they were doing with Riker. I like where Worf is at, but ultimately when you put it all together, it's not hanging on anything really other than, isn't it fun to see? This feels like a high school reunion. It doesn't feel like a show at this point.
Yeah, well, I guess that the things like the turns, like Data and stuff, are where they should be the focus kind of an episode or a season in a lot of ways. And what this series does is that it treats it just as kind of like a scene that happens, and then it's literally just like over at that point. You know, like they introduce the Data android, and then he does that thing where he does the brief battle with Lore, and he shuts down the partition and becomes whole. And Data's fine after that. You know, like it's not a continuing problem. It's just over. So a lot of the stuff that the show does is done that way, where the interesting kernel of an idea is just an accidentally interesting thing that happens along the sequence of random events that happen in the season. And you might find some of them to be interesting because they actually they sort of accidentally trip into a neat idea or something, but they're not going to do anything with it.
Yeah.
And I think that my disagreement about the first couple episodes of the season was that we all go in very optimistic that something is going to be different about this season. And the constant factor of these shows is that the way that they do things ties into that Data storyline, which is that they will introduce a bunch of stuff, and you are your viewer television mind that's been watching TV for 30 or 40 years starts to try to make sense of a narrative that's being sure. put to you. Like, you're trying to put stuff together in a way that, like, I'm being told this. I've been habituated to understand that when TV shows tell me these things, I should probably pay attention, and it's somehow going to link up down the line.
Right.
And yes. these shows don't do that. They don't care about that. So I think I was thinking about it. I think that's why the seasons open strong for us, because we yeah. think that there's still a chance, and there's never a chance. It's not going to happen. And that's yeah. the sad part.
And, you know, I think it goes back to stuff we've talked about a bunch through this season, where they are setting this stuff up specifically to be mysterious. And then when they give you the answer, it has nothing to do with anything they've shown you.
Like, right. Why does the door?
Why? Yeah, the door. Or why do the guys look? Why do the changelings look like bird guys?
Yeah,
I don't know. Why not? It's weird. Who are these guys?
Aren't these guys weird? I mean, you said on the Discord you thought that they were ignoring season two in terms of like the Borg relationship.
Yeah,
I think a better example is the door. Right? Like the fact that you. It's almost like you didn't watch the second season, because if you have another door metaphor, yes. it's so strange.
Well, Wes, it's a hold on, let me put my glasses up here. It's a very archetypal Freudian psychological symbol, and as we know from the show, symbols have nothing but meaning.
Just Jack chomping on a cigar as he penetrates that door frame. That's all I want to say. That's all I want.
Yeah, you know. So a couple. I'm not sure which way to go here. I'll go another thing I didn't like. This is my own pet peeve, but I do think it's a storytelling thing that makes the character seem stupid. 5 episodes ago or what, 3, whenever they go and meet Geordi at the museum.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was right, by the way. Hangar 12.
You got the door. Yeah, you got the door.
I picked the right door.
Yep.
Give that man the $10 million.
You win the press.
So, but I think that just accents what my issue is here. And I've talked about this probably here, definitely other shows. I have this really real pet peeve in life and in stories where characters unnecessarily go back and forth between locations.
Yeah.
So, for instance, like if I'm driving somewhere, I try to, it's like my little bit of OCD is I try to make sure that I'm not retracing my steps to get everywhere. I like to do it in kind of like a circle.
A circle, yeah. Know? Yeah.
If I can.
And or a storytelling, Star Trek insignia.
Yes, 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 yes. So they can know where you fucking am. Man, oh my God, if there was ever a signal that we are in for a shit show, it was that opening scene of the first episode of Discovery. Anyway, but in stories and narratives, it really bothers me when characters unnecessarily have to retrace their steps and go back to places they've been before.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just my mind thinking like this the story should always be moving forward, that kind of thing. It bothers me.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a good example of why. Because when the episode where they go to the museum, they have this conversation, because we talked about it, about how at that point they know that all of these ships are connected. The Titan's on the run. The reason they keep finding the Titan is because the Titan is part of the Great Link, or whatever the fuck they're calling it, in the Starfleet. And so they're at a museum full of ships who are not part of that Great Link, and they choose to get a cloaking device instead of picking up a ship that isn't part of this Great Link.
Yes.
Which, you know, would make sense if the ship they picked up was the old Enterprise.
Yep.
So they go through the rest of the story, and then they go to this Frontier Day thing where the Titan is now in danger and is able to be taken over for exactly the reasons that we thought it was going to be, because it's part of the Great Link. So now they have to escape the ship and go back to the museum to get a ship that isn't connected. And it's just this kind of like circuitous, like jumping around that is only done the way that they're doing it so they can save the reveal of the D for episode 9. Right. Which, you know, I understand that's where you're putting it. There's a reason Maverick doesn't get in the F-14 25 minutes into Top Gun 2.
Yeah.
But it just makes everybody feel dumb.
Well, it's a lack of consideration on the characters' part, because the characters don't talk about these options that they have. You know,
that's the thing. Even in that one episode, they do talk about it, where they're like, they're chasing us, and they're in a. They could have gotten the NX-01, and they would have been fine.
Oh, but no, they talk about it, but they don't. The characters don't have a discussion about we should take one of these ships, right?
Oh, sure.
Right.
Yes.
That's like they bring it up so that you, the viewer, are aware that there's a difference in the kind of ship connectivity that's going on.
Well, no, because remember, Geordi's daughter says, "What about the one in Hangar 12?" And he's like, no, shut up, don't talk about that. And that's just what they end up going back to get.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know, it's just those kind of things that feel, it feels like the hand of the writer, and I hate that stuff.
Yes.
And there's just so much in this that makes me feel like these characters are fucking morons. Like the one that was really killing me, I watched this episode twice, and both times the thing that got me was Beverly beating herself up because she didn't know that her son had a dormant Borg thing hidden like deep inside of his subconscious. She literally says, "How could I have missed this dormant part of Jack's life?" Because it was dormant.
Yeah.
How on earth or in space are you supposed to have known this, Beverly? There's no way you could have possibly known this.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't reveal his powers until the fifth episode or whatever, so there's no...
Yeah, like, he didn't know he had them.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, like, lines like that, I'm like, this is just... What is she thinking? Like, what... This is the really stupid thing for her to say.
No, the characters tend to not think much in these shows. It's Yeah, I didn't want to forget about, like, the actual linking of the ships... Right, so
fleet formation. That's an amazing technological feat that for some reason they only have now and have never been able to do before. They basically Bluetooth all their ships together.
What do you think of the mechanics of this? That's like the dormant Borg gene in Locutus and stuff. The ships being linked.
I will say the one thing I did think was clever was the transporter thing, because, but again, that's something that they put into the story, but they didn't really give enough attention to make you wonder about.
Yeah.
Because when Ro comes to the ship, she specifically takes the transporter, even though it wouldn't matter because she takes
the shuttle. But, the shuttle, you mean?
Yeah. The shuttle, to avoid having to take the transporter. But that's like the only time that ever comes up. Like,
why didn't she tell anybody? Don't take the transport.
Yeah, she doesn't tell anybody. Yeah. but I did like that mechanic of it. I was like, okay, that's actually pretty. That's kind of clever. It's silly as hell, but it's clever that they are every time they transport, they are putting a little bit of Borg into each person. That's that's kind of fun. That's fun.
I'm torn on it because I think that the idea is somewhat, I don't know if clever is the right word, but like the nuts and bolts of how this plan is working is fairly competent, I think. Like it's a sci-fi conceit and stuff like that. So it has these weirdnesses to it. But, you know, generally if they had spanned out or stretched out the story or like laid the groundwork for this idea better, I don't mind it that much. Like in terms of the nuts and bolts in the, I actually thought that the dormant Borg gene from Picard as Locutus that he never managed to get rid of was, it was both clever and a kind of like groany way where he has that line. He's like, "This is why in all the movies after I was assimilated, I could hear the Borg talking to me." And it's like, okay, I didn't need that. But I thought that outside of that, it was kind of a clever idea that's like...
No, it's no longer a metaphor for PTSD. It's a literal
homing
thing. Beacon in your fucking brain.
In your brain, which, to be fair, if he hadn't said it that way, you could say that like thematically it is the part of him that never forgot about the Borg and it's always been with him. He literalizes it, which makes it stupid. But so I thought all that was fine. I find the stupidest part of it to be the ship linking, which is like, because even Picard has a line, he's like, "This is a stupid fucking idea, Shelby." Yeah.
The explanation of it was insane to me, because when Shelby comes out in the Enterprise and she's talking about this fleet formation thing. She says, shit, what does she say? She says, this will ensure that, God forbid, should this fleet ever be taken over, we'll still be able to explore or some shit like that. I was like, what are you talking about?
Shelby doesn't come out looking good in this
All the ships are just going to become self-aware and continue breaking the Prime Directive all over the galaxy?
I think it's a good example of the show, right? Like, Shelby appears. You haven't seen her before. She comes in and she says this, and Picard, a character, will just go, isn't it ironic that Shelby, of all people, would be exploring pro-Borg technology? Yeah, all right.
I didn't even realize who she was. I thought she was the admiral that told Picard to go fuck himself in the first season.
She should have, right before she gets shot by all the Borg on the view screen, she just told Picard to go fuck himself again and then get shot.
Yeah.
It was Shelby, who's here.
I had to look her up because I didn't remember her as a character.
Yeah, best of both worlds. But that's a perfect encapsulation of the show. You know, it's like there's a more subtle way that you could have done that and not been so heavy-handed on the character having to literally say it out loud, that this is kind of a strange thing that Shelby, of all people, would be making such a, like, Borg copying technology over things. Mm. And it seems so exploitable. I mean, Frontier Day. I mean, I was right that Frontier Day is just a bunch of ships in space.
Just a bunch of ships.
Just a bunch of ships. And fireworks in space. So that's nice.
Yeah. On my second watch, I was like, do I shut my brain off for fireworks in space? I probably should.
I didn't. It looked pretty. It was kind of.
Yeah, no, I was just. I was at the point where I was starting to pick apart that stuff where I was like, well, actually, fireworks in space wouldn't work because there's no oxygen. But I'm sure they were plasma based.
Yeah, they're nacelle based plasma or something. Yeah. And I liked it when the. And Shelby's like, let's take the Enterprise F out and show its dick off. And everyone goes, oh, this is fantastic. This is good stuff.
So if you want to talk about thematics in this series or season, what do you think they're trying to say where everybody 25 and under is turned into a mindless zombie that their only mission is to destroy everyone who's older than 25.
Yeah, I thought it was...
so the old guys can save the day.
I thought it was backwards going with this new generation stuff, right? Like when they were starting to explain it, I thought that, the older people are going to become bored because then it means that the next generation has to save the day, which are the kids in this season.
Yes.
And that's completely backwards from what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I mean, that goes into the family thing, and you think that they would draw some kind of comparison about like the wisdom of age meaning something, but the kids aren't buying into anything of their own agency. They've been assimilated, as they say, 5,000 times in this episode. It's just it's strange, and I guess you could take it to take them to say that they think that the kids are like unable to think for themselves, really? Is that it? And then the older generation is the one that needs to be the caretakers or something. But
yeah, I didn't know Bill Maher wrote this season.
Yeah, that's right. Honestly,
if that is what they were trying to say, much more subtle than anything they tried to say in the last season. So I'll give them credit for that. But it doesn't seem like it's intentional. It seems like it's just sort of one of those things.
Yeah, in a better show with more of a focus, it's not that they haven't focused on the kids, but the kids have had nothing to say as their own characters in this season. They're just kids. The reason they're important is that they're related to the other characters.
Yes. Yeah. And also, if you're talking about everyone who's under 25 and under on all of these ships being assimilated to the point where they can take over the entire fleet, the loss of life is devastating for the Starfleet.
Yeah.
Because you have to assume everybody who's not been Borged on these ships is either dead or dying or probably hiding somewhere.
Yep.
And they're about to blow up the station. So even before they do anything, just taking over those ships, the number of Starfleet crew members who have been murdered is like, it's like Gettysburg.
Picard can sleep easy at this point. Something worse has come along that he is not, I guess he is still responsible
for it. Yeah, he's still responsible for it. Yeah.
Just up in the ante. My favorite ship moment was when, in a budget cutting move, after the fleet has been taken over, the Excelsior comes on and it's like, guys, I'm going to try to fight back. And it goes out and they're all just watching the screen of the little icon, and then the three torpedoes,
Star Trek
the three torpedoes just fly at it, and the person goes like, oh fuck.
Tell my wife I... Yeah, that was a classic Star Trek move of just showing everything on the little screen there, and so they don't have to show the ships.
I just thought the guy's voice was so funny. He's like, guys, join me on Channel 99. I'm going to talk about how we're going to fight back against the Borg. Yeah.
And also then once they figure out that they have to go to the maintenance thing, Picard opens a channel to the whole ship and says, everybody come to the maintenance place. So all of the Borg go to the maintenance place. I don't know.
Yep.
What'd you think about the death of Shaw?
He's not a good character. He's a character who tricked us into thinking he was a good character.
I think I have to agree with you at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, he's...
I'm... Go ahead.
Well, he encapsulates everything. He starts off and you think, oh, this guy's got something. This guy's got something going on. And then he's so schizophrenic for 9 episodes that you can't identify what he actually believes or what he... Like, he never... He basically... The character of Shaw was basically a character who would... sort of be antagonistic and sort of a thorn in the side, but would never actually cause any difficulties for the main characters. Like, he would just go along with stuff at the end of it. And then he dies at the very end, you know, bonding after the Seven thing where he calls her Seven for the first time. And honestly, that's all undermined by that, whatever that episode that was that we pointed out that someone calls her Commander Hansen. Yeah, she does. It's like, what the fuck? Like, what is the show doing? Yeah.
Yeah. I also, I mean, obviously, not everybody can have a happy ending. But if the defining characteristic of this Shaw character is that he has intense PTSD from surviving Wolf 359,
yeah,
and then he gets fucking murked out by the Borg before he gets to like work through that. I don't know.
Sisko was traumatized by the Borg.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. You gotta kill somebody and. Raffi exists.
Raffi can't. why are Raffi and Seven even in this season? Quite frankly,
honestly. And I mean, I thought it was pretty. As soon as they started that whole sequence of we have to escape from the ship, and then Shaw gets killed, and I'm like, okay, one down. Seven isn't leaving. I'm like, okay, two down. Raffi's like, no, I'm staying with Seven. I'm like, okay, that's all three of them. They're going to the Enterprise because they want to just have the Enterprise go.
Remember, there are a couple too. I always think that's funny.
Yeah. I was thinking too. They missed the opportunity to have Shaw on the Enterprise and just like lose his mind.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, that might be too close to Galaxy Quest.
What do you think about Shaw? Anything different than what I said about him?
Or? No, I feel like he had the makings of something interesting. And then he kind of got lost in the shuffle after episode 4 or so.
Yeah.
And didn't really end up... Honestly, they probably should have killed him earlier, frankly. If this is just what they were going to do.
There was a point where it seemed like he stopped being captain, even though he was. Like, he had a couple episodes where it seemed like he was the one who made the decisions. And then there was some kind of switch where he got hurt for a little bit and he couldn't be the captain. But he never recovered from that. And it's down to what we talked about in... whatever the last episode where he's like totally impotent while Vedic is executing people. And it's like, I don't know what his point is. You're probably right. He should have died when he sustained that injury in the first place. Like, that's the time to kill him.
Or if you wanted, you could have killed him in that last, that scene where where Vedic kills the other officer. I mean, at least he's be standing up.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he's covering them as they run off the ship, but it doesn't have any real dramatic weight to me for him to get killed there.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of things doing new things, and obviously there's still an episode left where they could do this, but I feel like it would have been excuse me, the time to have done this would probably have been in this episode. You've got the Borg and you've got the changelings, right? And they apparently are just have formed an axis of evil or something, both of their species are defined by their wanting to be the only ones in power.
Yep.
I have to imagine it would have been so much cooler if the Borg assimilated the Great Link.
Yeah.
And so now you have Borg who are part Borg and part Changeling.
Yeah,
That'd be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, they're like T-1000s, basically.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yes, because,
but I mean, there might still be. Maybe that's the explanation for the big floaty head. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. I don't mind that really. It's I still end up coming back to this place of like, I know that we still have some Voyager left to do, and the Voyager will deal with the Borg and stuff like that.
Some?
We have quite a bit of Voyager left.
An understatement of the year, right
there. I just... I think if I, you know, if I was rebooting the series, say I went back and I was given Alex Kurtzman powers or something, or I was the executives at Paramount that hired Kurtzman. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first question in the interviews would be, I don't know how you phrase this where you're not leading the question. I would say, what do you want to do with the Borg? Right.
Yeah.
I think
and then you immediately say no.
That would be an interesting interview question for the way that I would run the franchise, which is that I think a lot of the showrunners would take that to imply that they want to use the Borg somehow, right? So I have to come up with an idea off the top of my head that involves the Borg. And what I think that the franchise needed at that point was someone who said, you know, I just don't think you can get any more juice out of this lemon that we're trying to squeeze with the Borg, because they're just such a perfect example of an entity that cannot ever match up with its first appearance in something, right? Like they just can't. You can't beat the first couple episodes of the times that you've seen the Borg, which is Q-Who and then Best of Both Worlds, where their entire ethos is on display, their weakness is exploited, and they're beaten that way while pushing us to the precipice of loss.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you bring them back, it obviously becomes weaker and weaker, and you have to keep like amplifying their abilities or doing something. Or in the case of what this show does, they make it a personal battle between, it's like a vendetta that the Borg have against Picard and stuff like that. And it's one of those diminishing returns type thing. And eventually you've ended up in this place where the Borg no longer represent what made them so interesting in the first place. They're just a kind of powerful bad guy who is a zombie, and I don't know. There's nowhere really to go with them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if they had done, if this had been the payoff to three seasons of building to the Borg's return, then I would be more on board with it. But I don't think that was what they were trying to do at all, because they played a huge part in the last season. And then they played, even though they were wasted in the first season, they played a big part in the first season. At least in the first season, they tried to do something more interesting with them, with the idea of the decommissioned Borg ship and, you know, the
X-Borg stuff.
Yeah, the X-Borg and the reclamation stuff they were trying to do there. Like, I can see that being a starting point for Picard's story with the Borg that culminates in the return of Borg Classic.
Right.
But I think, it does not feel to me like that's what they were doing at all. And B, season two just fucking torpedoes any of that possibility.
They called them the, what the fuck did they call them? The Borg, what are the Borg called? It's the Borg Collective, right? Is the name. What do they call them? They call them the Borg Cooperative in season two.
Oh, yeah. When they form an HOA in the second season.
Oh, man. Oh, man. The Borg Cooperative.
And especially, you know, again, like with the, just looking at diminishing returns here, right? You, I mean, even just like not even using the thing, not even diminishing return like narratively, but as far as like hitting the dopamine button, because in season two, the Borg Queen is in like seven out of the 10 episodes of that.
Walking around LA.
Walking around LA, and then she's singing songbook standards at parties and shit. throwing guys through the windows of jazz clubs. But in this one, it's like they play the Borg. It's really interesting, actually, to me, because they play the Borg Queen card again. But the thing that makes it special is that it's Alice Krieg who's playing the Borg Queen, who right. played her in First Contact, or at least doing her voice. I don't know if maybe she was like, I'll do it, but I don't want to be in fucking makeup.
It could be, yeah.
But it's like that. When I heard her voice, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I appreciate that. Because it's nice to see her back doing this. But once I got past that, I was like, I mean, we spent the whole last season with the upper torso of the Borg Queen. I don't really know what is super...
She doesn't have anything left to say about it. It's just a maniacal.
Unfortunately, the thing I'm very curious about is if they would have used the woman who played her last season if she hadn't passed away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably, I think, right? Just for that consistency.
I guess, but I don't know.
Season three might
I don't
have,
know.
Yeah.
Because, like, the whole thing is bringing back everybody that you remember. And Alice Krieg, I guess if you want to say there's a nostalgia for the Borg Queen.
She is the OG Borg Queen. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, she played her on Enterprise, right? Was it on Enterprise?
Voyager.
Voyager? Right, Voyager. Yeah, yeah. So she's, I mean, that's who the Borg Queen is. So, yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah. Do we want to wrap up with, we probably talked about it, but like just the Enterprise D sets and stuff like that. I watching all those characters on the bridge, I mostly got the sense that it gave me it too much time has passed, really, and it feels like a behind the scenes documentary about
I felt the exact same way.
Yeah, yes. Making of Star Trek The Next Generation, like the actors come back and walk around the sets and like talk about their experiences. Yeah.
It's like have you ever seen they did a Batman 66 like special one-off maybe like 20 years ago where it was called like Return to the Batcave. Mm-hmm. And it was Adam West and Burt Ward like shooting the shit on in the Batcave set, the original Batcave. And it felt exactly like that where it's just like, yeah, this is, we were here for a lot of time. And, you know, the Batmobile was in here and we had a lot of laughs in this place. Didn't we, Burt? Like, yes, Adam, we did.
They always have the stuff that's actually the things they remember. They're like, do you remember craft services every Tuesday would bring in the biggest burritos? And they're like, oh, I love those burritos.
Oh, yeah, they were terrible.
It's that
kind of
thing.
Yeah, but it did very much feel like an Entertainment Tonight EPK piece or something where they bring the crew back onto the old ship.
Where Stuart walks down and looks at the plaque of the Enterprise and stares at it and stuff.
Yeah. You know, and I was talking to Murphy about this earlier today, and he said, at least thank God that they turned the lights on. And I was thinking about, again, this is something where it seems like it's so close to being on purpose, but I think the rest of modern Star Trek has really torpedoed this. Because I said, if it hadn't been for every other modern Star Trek show looking exactly the way this show looks, I might think that they specifically lit this show darkly in order to have the contrast of the brightness of the Enterprise Deep Bridge.
That's a long way to go for that one shot at the end. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Yeah. But the fact that every single show looks exactly like this tells me that's not what the point was. Obviously, they just couldn't light. You know, honestly, I know Generations gets a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I think the way that they shoot the bridge in Generations is very interesting. The way that they light the bridge and the way that they kind of split the costumes they're wearing and stuff to break the shapes up a bit.
Yeah.
And so I think part of it was like when they went back onto the bridge and it was just lit like the show from 1987, part of me was like, I think maybe that's what it was. Like it didn't feel like they were trying to interpret this for the new show.
Yeah.
It just felt like we're just going to shoot this like it's 1987 and they're on their way to Farpoint.
Yes.
And I think maybe that is part of what bugged me about it.
Yeah. It's, I could see that. I think it had just worn out anything I could feel by that point.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if I could really feel anything, but like if there was it's both obvious that it has to happen and as you were saying, it doesn't line up with the context of what's going on at that point, down to like the. I feel it's a strange thing, right? Like this series, the moment that you're supposed to feel like you're home is when they're on the bridge. And it's not really even when the characters reintroduce each other to themselves. Like the moments of where the writing, where the characters from TNG came back and met with each other, have the sort of platitudes of it's good to see you and stuff, but there is no... I find no sense of home within the characters themselves in a way that the bridge is designed to do that stuff and to make you feel like, oh, we're going back to TNG and this is all that stuff. That's probably the biggest failing to me in terms of like the character interaction scenes is that the TNG characters never felt like they were interacting with each other in a way that was a natural extension of what I knew those characters to be doing in the first place. And I think that's what's strange about it. Like, it's too much relying on being on the bridge, and I should feel more of just that through the characters talking to each other than I managed to during the season.
You know what I have done? I think another problem is that there's two Enterprises in this episode.
The F and the D.
Yeah.
What happened to the E? Why couldn't they... Worf says
they make it. Yeah, they make it. Does it blow up in Nemesis?
No, because they crash it into the ship and it backs out, right?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember.
Do they blow it up to blow up Shinzon's ship?
Let's see. Enterprise.
We have to know.
E.
Do, do, do. 1701. The Borg threat. The Briar Patch. Continuing. No, it's still out there.
Oh. I don't know what that was in reference to then.
They obviously couldn't take the E, something Worf said, alluding to an incident rendering the ship unusable, presumably. Okay, so it's not a reference. They're just saying it's a joke, kind of. Did you hear what I just said?
I was reading. Say it again.
LaForge mentioned...
Riveting.
LaForge mentioned that they obviously couldn't take the Enterprise E, something that Worf said was not his fault, alluding to an incident rendering the ship unusable, presumably either through destruction or some other means.
Oh, so it was just a joke in terms of something that happened
off screen
in between years.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
That is weird.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Sure.
Not that it's bad, but for all the references, I was like, when did Worf do something?
I know. Every reference they make in the show is directly linked to something you can pull up on Memory Alpha. So it's weird that they just make an offhand joke.
Yeah.
What I would have done is I would have had the big moment be Picard and the Enterprise crew have to get onto the Enterprise F, right? Because you've got Frontier Day, all these ships.
Yeah.
The Enterprise F is the flagship, right? And so that's where they have to go. And that's where you get your little bit of like swell of nostalgia. It's like, oh shit, the TNG crew is going to be back on the bridge of the Enterprise. It's not the one we want, but they're back on the bridge.
Yeah.
This obviously would require the show to be different, but what I would have done is I would have had Geordi send the kids back to the museum and have him go, you need to, or maybe not Geordi, maybe Geordi's daughter. Like the guys are in trouble on the F, and Geordi's daughter is like, we need to help them. And then the daughter who works at the museum, and she's like, I have an idea. We need to go back to the museum. So they go back to the museum. And so when the Enterprise F is fighting the Borg cube or whatever the fuck they're going to do, over the mountain like Gandalf comes the next generation
riding
in the TNG Enterprise.
Yeah.
Bang, 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 blow everything up. And then like the denouement of your show is the original crew back on the bridge of the Enterprise D. And then you can have your little jerk off session.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. I think that. It's maybe that's going to be the strangest part is how, like, do you think that the show is intentionally talking about the next generation being the kids and stuff? Like, it's walking such a fine line, I feel, between not recognizing that enough and recognizing it. Like, they talk about it, but there seems to be no, there seems to be no idea as to what the next generation is supposed to do, being the next generation of the kids in this. Like, are they supposed to take the mantle from them? Are they supposed to be the heroes? Are they supposed to recognize something in the elders? The show doesn't seem to really have any idea about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know. And I mean, the next episode being titled The Last Generation.
Oh, is that what it's called?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't exactly clear that up. But yeah, I think it's just I think it's just that. I think I don't think that they use the Enterprise D correctly. I think that's the thing that was bothering me a bit.
Yep.
Like
they dug up the saucer. That was the one thing I liked about it. They went back to get the saucer off the planet.
The idea that, you know, they have to, I like the idea that they have to use the old ship to defeat the new technology. I'm always going to mark out for that. I loved it when they did it in Maverick, but in Maverick, when he goes and he gets in the F-14, he doesn't spend like 5 minutes just like stroking
caressing
the side of it.
Yep.
You know, he's got to get out of there because he's got to go fucking save people. And so I think they just didn't use it correctly. And also, this is a little style thing that I think they totally flubbed. The last shot of the episode is the Enterprise D going off to warp, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't they turn the camera around and do it like the end of the credits?
Yeah, I know.
It's a stupid little detail, but it just, I mean, if you're going to go in on all of this nostalgia shit, you may as well go all the way.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're done with this one, which is called Vox.
Oh, there was also a USS Pulaski.
Yep. I heard that. Yeah. Yeah, all the references.
So is Jurati showing up next episode? Probably not, right?
No, I don't think so. No. So let's end this one with, I don't know if there's a question to have. What in 5 years from now, maybe it's unfair to ask because there's still one episode of this. In 5 years from now, what do you think is going to be your memory of the Picard series? Like what incident is going to be your memory that happened, if you remember anything?
What incident? Like, did I stub my toe while I was walking to the TV to watch it?
Yes, while slapping your knee in laughter, and you injured yourself while watching this. Is there anything you're going to remember? What plot points or thing that happens in the series is going to be your memory of it? Because you brought up the Jurati Borg thing, and I was wondering if that would be my memory of it.
Honestly, I hate to say this because it sucks, but I think the
Picard being run over but with the Tesla.
Yeah, I think the total miscarriage of season two is going to be the thing that I remember more than anything else, because it's this season has been fun, but it's like a bag of popcorn, kind of.
Yeah.
And the first season,
I don't remember much about the first season.
I don't remember much at all either. I think the one thing that is going to be the lasting legacy of the show is that they put Picard's brain in a robot. But
it's weird. Like it was funny. I was watching with Amy, and she has only somewhat been paying attention, and obviously I hadn't seen the previous seasons. But she was flabbergasted that this Picard was a robot. That was like completely shocking to her, and it led to a lot of interesting questions just coming from someone who's like, why did they do that? Why does no one talk about him being a robot? Like, what can he do? And she also thought it was hysterical that in the first season they gave him like a 10-year, 15-year lifespan anyway, just to get around it.
It's the stupidest thing.
So
it is on par with what I think is the stupidest thing from the Star Wars prequels, which is when they show how Palpatine got his wrinkly face.
Yes, the forest lightning. Yeah, Alistair and Simon were watching that. They watched the lightsaber fights, and because that's one of them, obviously. And they found that similarly very silly, that his face got melted from the lightning. So I guess that's it. We're done. I guess my final thing would just be like the Picard is a robot thing, right? In mm-hmm. a in a well done series, I think that would be the thing that I would remember. You know, in the series as it stands, it's one in a long chain of like, oh yeah, he's a robot now, that kind of thing. So,
do you have any? So here's a question for you going into this final episode. Do you have any predictions, or do you not even really care?
Haven't really thought about it. There's going to be a Jack and Picard's relationship somehow saves the day thing.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, honestly, I was a little bit surprised by how short this episode was, considering that unless the last one is like an hour and 20 minutes, I feel like they could have done a lot more. But no, do you have anything, any thoughts about it? I haven't really honestly thought about it because I just don't think it's going to... Do you think that they are... Is it going to be a Lord of the Rings ending where it's the characters after everything is reconciled for a good period of time? You know what I mean?
I think there's a good chance of that, yes.
Okay.
Which means they have to wrap everything up in like the first 25 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
Didn't they do that? Did they do that last season too? I feel like there was a season, I don't know if it was Picard, but I feel like there was one of these seasons where it was going into that final episode. It was like, okay, they have a lot of ground to cover, and they covered that ground real fast.
No time like the present.
But yeah, I think for me, it's a mark of the show where at this point there is just so many disparate elements up in the air that I feel no tension.
Yeah.
And I feel no, like after what they've revealed in this episode and also what they've said about the floaty head being the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
They literally anything could happen. And I don't mean that in a good way. I just
you have to accept whatever they give you. Really?
Yeah, like a story baton kind of way where it's like whoever gets to write the last episode is going to do literally whatever the fuck they want. And it doesn't engage me in a way that makes me like interested to see how it all shakes out.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because, you know, you want that. Actually, the one thing I will say at the end, of all of the references in this whole season, the one that got me the most, and I was very surprised that it did because I think I wasn't even, it was the one that I wasn't even thinking about happening, was hearing Majel Barrett's voice as the computer.
Yeah.
I thought that was the one that actually got me.
Yeah. I don't know what they pulled it from. Must be some. What does she say? I can't even remember what she says.
She says something about transferring control of the Enterprise to Captain Picard.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Easy enough to pull that from an episode, I guess.
Someone on the Discord, I think, said they knew which one it was from.
Knew the episode, yeah. All right. I guess that's it. We'll see how it all wraps up next episode, and we'll move on from there, I suppose. Power rank the TNG characters returning before we go out.
Based on how many of them just stand in the background doing nothing?
Based on their limited dialogue in this season. Who's at the bottom? I would
say at the bottom, probably Crusher.
Yeah, I think it's Crusher.
Crusher, then... honestly, I don't know. I kind of feel weird, but well, Geordi maybe. I don't know. I was gonna say Picard because I feel like he's such a wet blanket that
I think
he's not really much of a presence.
I think it's either Troy or Picard for me.
Yeah, at least Troy, I feel like has had something to do.
She was shocking. Shockingly, she had the most important thing to do in it. Really,
right? Yeah, yeah, and like Picard. I think that's another part of it is so much of this show just feels like him sort of moonwalking his way through all these things and not really having a ton of impact
on what's going on. No. Yeah, I'd put Picard then. I think that's justifiable. After that, I would probably put it's Troy or Geordi, I think, at that point.
I think I would put Troy over Geordi. Well, Geordi Troy actually has something consequential to do with the story.
Yeah.
But Geordi is actually kind of in a more interesting place, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. He has the more, you would think, to be impactful connection between them. So then it's Data, Frakes, and Worf at that point. It's probably Data's three.
I would agree with that.
I would go Data, Riker, Worf would be my rankings up to the top.
Yeah, that tracks. Hmm.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting the show on patreon.com/thePenske File. Hope you all enjoyed episode 9 called Vox, and The Last Generation is coming up next week. I think we're going to be a couple days late just because I'm on vacation and coming back, and I think, Clay, you're busy as well on the Friday. Mm-hmm. So we'll have something out maybe the weekend, maybe just after the weekend. Give us time to think about it. Watch it a couple times.
And I apologize if you love the show and we're really bringing you down.
I don't apologize. You need to like
shut
other
up.
Things.
They're paying us money.
It's I've never. Yeah, it's just I mean, maybe I think I feel like I've made the reference before. The show kind of feels like how if you play Keno with enough numbers, you win if you don't get any numbers right. You know, like because of how hard it is to not get a number. And I feel like it's that kind of thing. It's it just didn't get anything right, and you maybe shouldn't. But I don't know. It's weird.
I have noticed that usually by the time we record, there's a promo for the next episode out somewhere, and there is not one as of yet that I have seen for episode 10.
So. Interesting. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with The Last Generation in a week. You know, the patrons should pick a great Picard TNG episode for us to cover when this is all done, just to go back to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about like Darmok or something, you know, like one of the classic TNG episodes that has Picard featured in it.
Especially, I mean, I don't know if... Kyle might know the answer to this. if there's one of those episodes that I was not on, I would love to do one because I didn't.
Oh, like one of the classics.
Yeah, I wasn't on everything when we were doing TNG. Yep. So if there is a one that you covered that I wasn't on, that is a particularly good one. Or even either way,
I'll put a poll. I'll find all the ones that you didn't do that we hadn't covered or that you hadn't covered with us, and I'll pick like only the top ranked ones on IMDb or something like that, and we'll go from there. I think that'd be good. That'll be our goodbye to The Next Generation, I suppose. We'll just be watching that and moving on.
And then we should cover Nemesis again.
Yeah, I know. Should we just watch Nemesis?
Part of me wants to, honestly. We should watch Nemesis and we should watch All Good Things and then just have a battle, a showdown.
Let us know, people, in the comments what you thought. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week.